Welcome to Charter School Conversations, a weekly podcast for the Utah charter school community. I'm your host, Gina James, with the Utah Association of Public Charter Schools. We'll do a little board training, have conversations with charter school leaders, and touch on issues that affect us all. I hope you enjoy today's conversation. I'm joined today with Joylyn Lincoln, who's the Director of Training with UAPCS. She is a former teacher, a charter school board member, a lover of all things policy, and general charter school expert. So if there is something that you want to know about Utah charter schools, Joylyn is your best resource. Today's conversation, we are going to focus on what to do when you get on a charter school board. So just to explain a little bit, charter school boards are what provides the governance to help charter schools fulfill their mission, their vision, and their purpose. And it is very helpful as a new board member, as they're brought on, to help them understand their roles and how best to support the school. So either as a board chair and you need this information to help kind of bring on new board members, or if you are a new board member yourself, we hope that today's conversation will help. Hi, Joylyn. How are you doing?
Pretty good. How are you?
Good. I started in on the whole charter school mission, having one of my children attend. And then as I got more involved with some committees and helping out with some fundraisers and things, I ended up on the board. And I really do feel like it was like, I kind of fell into that. I fell into the board.
Isn't that how it happens most of the time? You just end up on the board.
It does. Now, I know you were on the board too, currently and previously on a charter school board. So tell me, what took you onto the board?
I just always loved policy and rules, and I wanted to be in a decision-making position as opposed to a party planning position. I don't really like to do PTA or go on field trips. In fact, I'd do about anything to not go on a field trip. So when I wanted to volunteer at my kid's school, then being on the board was a nice fit for my personality of just having documents and organizing and being kind of, I guess, in charge.
So you didn't want to wrestle kids from the back of the bus. You wanted to make sure that the policies getting them on the bus and setting up those things were safe. So
yeah, I wanted to control how the school was.
Nice, nice. Well, I remember the first time I went to a board meeting and I was sitting and listening to the finance report and hearing all these acronyms and then hearing all these different things. And I'm like, well, how do you even make a decision? How do you know what to do? Where do you even start? And then joining the board, it kind of became more urgent to understand what I was doing. So what are some things that new board members need to understand?
I think the most important thing that a new board member needs to understand is the school's charter. You need to read it and realize that it's the agreement with the school board and the state as to how education is going to happen at the school, what the mission and philosophy is. So if you get on a school board and your mission, your personal mission or philosophy or what you view education should look like is different than that charter, you're in the wrong seat on a bus. You really have to join and become a advocate for that charter because that is the agreement. And so I really think that's the first thing a board member needs to read is to read that charter and read it through often. I've sat on a board for over 10 years and I still try to read our charter before every board meeting. Now we have a short charter. It's only 34 pages, so it's doable. But when we had a longer charter before it was amended, I would read like sections. So I try to read 20 to 30 pages of the charter before every board meeting because I wanted to make sure my decisions that were made at the board meeting were always in line with the charter and not with what I thought the charter said, but what it actually says.
Why is that so important?
Because I think we can start to have mission and vision drift, things that we think are important or that would benefit our child at the school. So we want to kind of change it, when we really need to stay back to that contract with the state as to how we're going to educate kids at our school.
And I think that's important to point out. It is a contract. And so there are some things that the state charter school board or whoever your authorizer is checking on, and they only know what those things, you know, kind of the benchmarks that you have by looking at your charter. So it is really important to know that. So I think that's a great point.
I think another really important document, too, is the Articles of Incorporation and the bylaws. They're usually incorporated into a charter here in Utah. Sometimes they're not, but most of the time they are. And those are like the guidelines for a board, what you can do and what you can't do, how long your term is, how voting happens, who can sign contracts. It's all spelled out in your bylaws and in the Articles of Incorporation. And that's another legal document that you're bound to follow. It's not a suggestion or a guideline. It's actually something that you're required to follow as you stand or as you sit on that board.
So are those consistent with charter schools across the state or do they vary? How much do they vary?
They kind of vary quite a bit. Some articles might say that there'll be 15 members on our board. Some might say we'll have as few as three. They really just have in membership or how long the terms are. Are they going to be 3 years? Can you have a term that's forever? When I first started serving on the board, my term for members when the school was founded was they were on the board until they died or were voted off the island or they resigned. That's how long your term was. But every new member coming back or coming to the board had a 4-year term. So it kind of was funny because I was the longest founding board member on the board, but then I resigned because I wanted to go teach at the school. And then 4 or 5 years after I was done teaching the school, they begged me to come back and it felt like a good time to go back. And now I have a term. So it really has to make sure you understand those bylaws because I couldn't go in and think, well, I'm the queen. I can stay forever until I'm voted off the island when there's a term limit. So those bylaws are really important to develop that structure of the board and so that you know what the responsibilities are.
So if things change in a school, can the bylaws change also? And how does that happen?
Your bylaws can be changed and they'll specify inside the bylaws how to change them. And then because they're part of your Articles of Incorporation, that's a state document that you file when you become a nonprofit, you actually have to go and make sure you refile those and that your authorizer is okay with those changes because usually they're part of your charter.
Okay, that's good to know because sometimes as schools are existing longer, they figure out, oh, how we have our board set up maybe doesn't work now, or, you know, we want to add members or go to fewer members, things like that. And those are all changes in those bylaws. So as a new member, it's a good refresher to kind of say, oh, I just read the bylaws. It looks like we are following this or we're not following this. Because sometimes those new members can bring a fresh set of eyes to some of these documents and make sure that we're following along on that. So,
and that's a good point. I've seen that happen quite often where a new board member reads those bylaws and goes, oh, we're not following this. And then the whole board kind of does this panic or freak out. What do we do now? Well, it's really simple. Just get into compliance or go ahead and follow the procedures to change the bylaws and then file that with your authorizer and with the state.
Great. Thanks. What other things can board members look at, documents or things should they be familiar with?
I always think looking at an organization chart is really a helpful thing so you can understand the structure of the governance, those that are kind of the how well is the school doing, and the administration, those I call them the superheroes that really get into how will we do things and what that relationship should be. Now, I have to laugh. When I first joined our board, somebody developed a flow chart, and I wish you could see it. In fact, maybe we'll post it on our website. It had so many lines and arrows, and I think you almost needed a PhD to follow the flow chart and understand who reported to who and who was over what. It shouldn't be that complicated. It really should just be the governing board then flows down to the administrator and possibly the administrator and the financial business manager, and then all of the rest of the employees are listed under that. So it should be a pretty simple flowchart. If it's complicated and you need a PhD or a master's, then you need to relook at that flowchart. Your board is getting into way more than they should be.
Well, I think that's a good point to make right now, the difference between governance versus management, and really the role of board members are to govern. So like you had mentioned, it's really how well is the school doing things and not figuring out how will they do it. So it's not figuring out the nitty-gritty details of day-to-day running of the school. That's really for the administrator, where the governing board is just to make sure that they're staying true to the charter and vision and mission that was set up, you know, when the school was founded and then following through on that. So looking at that structure of the organization is really important to make sure that that's happening correctly.
I always like when I get my board packet to go through and I write questions all over as I read through it. And once I've written all my questions on my packet, I go back and phrase them in how well questions. How well are we doing? And really try to make sure that I'm staying in the proper role of governance and I'm not trying to be that superhero administrator that's going to save the day and do the how will work. So I really start looking at my questions. And by going back and reviewing my questions ahead of time, then I can make sure that I'm staying in that governance and focusing in on how well is the school doing instead of the operational side of the how will we do or how will we accomplish our goals.
Great. Okay, now you mentioned something that some of our new board members may not be familiar with. What is a board packet?
Oh, a board packet is the documentation for everything you should be voting on or any reports that you're receiving for your board meeting. And you should receive that information anywhere from a week to 24 hours before the board meeting. I always like it at about 3 to 5 days out. I think that's kind of the sweet spot. You have time to read it and digest it. 24 hours, it's really hard to read it and make sure you have a thorough understanding of everything you're expected to vote on. And then I have a policy, and I'm pretty strict on my policy. If somebody hands me something at the board table and wants me to vote on it, there's no way I can follow the board meeting and read through the document and be able to actually vote and make sure we're in line with our charter and the contract that we have with the state. My own policy is if somebody hands me something at the table, I'm going to vote no on it until I've actually had time to study it and make sure it's in line with the mission and vision of the school and that it's something that is actually the board's responsibility to vote on. I don't want to be working on how wills, even if they're brought to the table for my vote.
That's a good point. So what are some of the specific components in that board packet?
So your board packet should always have a report from your administrator on how well things are going in the school. And it should focus, again, on your academics and the goals in your charter, and then anything you've asked him to report back to you on. And then you should also have your financial reports. It's really important that every month you're seeing financial reports, and there should be several financial reports. You should see a balance statement, an income statement, an APR, which is program accounting, and we'll cover that in another podcast. We may even bring in somebody else on that because I think finances is a little dry. Love policy, not so much on the finances. But then you should see balance chart and cash flow chart, and you should be even seeing a check register, really having a good idea of what is going on financially at your school. So we've got our director's report with our academics. We've got our business report with our finances. And we should be reviewing some policies and making sure that we're in compliance and we're actually doing what the policies say. It's not the board's job to just pass a policy and then put it on a shelf, in a binder on a shelf and never look at it again, never have the school look at it again. That's your safety net to make sure that your school is safe and compliant with the law. So you should be reviewing your policies on a regular basis. And then just a small portion of your meeting will actually be voting on new policies or items that will help the school deliver its mission and vision.
That's great. And I know too in that packet is going to be the leading document is the agenda. So over, and then all those are components of that agenda, and then minutes from previous. So for new board members, I know for me personally, it was helpful just to come up to speed with what was going on in the school by reviewing several months of the agendas and minutes and the board packets before I joined the board so that I kind of knew the conversations that were continuing going on. I knew what policies that had been reviewed and looked over, and I knew kind of where we were financially. And so I think that's really helpful for new board members to look at.
I always think a new board member, if possible, should attend 2 or 3 board meetings before they join the board so they really understand the dynamics of the board as well as reading those prior minutes. And I always like to go back a year because you can see a lot in a year and you'll see everything in the development cycle of a school year by going back a full year. And then you won't be caught off guard by surprises like in August, we have to approve the literacy grant. We just know that it's coming. We saw that in the minutes last time. It's expected that it'll be again in August.
That's great. No, that's a good point. And you touched on policy. I think it's important, too, to be familiar with some of the policies that you have administratively at the school. And then, you know, there's just kind of different sets. There's like employee policies that the schools have that we look over, as well as policies for student behavior and all the different categories. And so to be familiar with the policy manual for a new board member is very helpful.
Yeah, it shouldn't be a huge policy manual. You should be able to read it in a single setting. It's not like Utah state law, which is binders and binders and binders of law. So really go back and review your policies and make sure you understand them and then continue to review them at board meetings. At every board meeting, you should review 2 or 3 policies and ask as a board, is this policy effective? How do we know it's effective? What evidence do we have of its effectiveness? And do we need to change something?
Now, when it comes to working as a board member, it's interesting when you bring up policy, it always makes me think, well, somebody's going to come up to you at some point at some fundraiser or some like literacy night or a back to school night and be like, oh, you're on the board. Can I talk to you for a second?
I always hate going and shopping at the local grocery store. For me, it was Walmart. That was the only thing closed for the longest time. If there was something, anything controversial at the school, I would drive 30, 40 miles just to go grocery shopping so nobody would come up and say, hey, did you hear? I want to always make sure that I'm getting stuff the proper way. And for most parents or community members, if they have a question about the school, the proper place to take that question is the school director. They're the one that's empowered to answer that. And then if they have a grievance or they don't like that answer, then they can take that to the board. But the first stop for questions should always be with the school director.
So how do you deal with that as a board member?
Sometimes I'll listen to them and then say, hey, you know, I've got a great way to solve that. If you'll go talk to the school director, I think he'll be able to take care of that. No problem. I've seen him in operation and I just trust that he'll be able to take care of you. And then if they're still hesitant, then you can say, hey, would you like me to join you? And I'll come and, you know, almost hold their hand while they come and talk to the director, just so that they see that you're asking them to go back to the director. And then I don't ever want my director to be blindsided. So anytime somebody kind of comes up to me at Walmart or wherever I am with a question, I'll always shoot him an email that night, say, hey, so-and-so came up and talked to me. And I reminded them that the best person to solve that was you. I just wanted to give you a heads up that you should see them in the next day or two. And if not, you might want to reach out to them because they do have some questions.
So can you do anything as a board member?
No, because as a board member, the only time you have power is when you're sitting at the board table and your board only speaks through motion on something that's on your agenda. And then it has to be a vote where the majority carries. So as an individual, you have no board power. It's just in a board meeting with an agenda that's been properly noticed.
I think that's a really important distinction for people to know, because if you are looking to get a lot of personal power at the school, the board is not going to be the place to do it.
No, if you want to be the queen for the day or the superhero, the place you want to be is the school executive director or the school leader. That's where the power of the school lies. The board is really making sure that they're guiding the school and that they're doing what they say they'll do in their charter and that they're avoiding everything that's illegal.
And with that power comes great responsibility. So I don't know how many people will purposely reach out to do that. But I think that's important to understand as a board member. You have no opinion. No, well, you can have all the opinions you want, but you have no power except in that board meeting in the vote. Now that kind of brings us to another issue that is very important to understand as a new board member is the Open and Public Meetings Act. And we'll have a whole separate podcast on that. But this is the act that states the business of the public, which the school is a public school, and so the funding is public, so all your meetings have to be open and public. That only happens in view of the public. So speak to that a little bit about the Open and Public Meetings Act and how it functions with board members in understanding some of the conversations and things that happen to drive, you know, decisions at the school, but how that needs to be housed within the law.
So kind of just a nutshell, for open meeting law is you have to notice your agenda at least 24 hours in advance. We want to give the public an opportunity to come to your board meeting. Now, in charter schools, it's rare that we have a lot of public, but you may have a hot button that pops up every now and then. Right now, the current one is masks. Should we have masks or not masks? So you might have more people interested in coming to your meeting. So we need to make sure that we properly notice the meeting with advance notice and that we list on the agenda exactly what we're going to be speaking about. We're not going to just say policies and then have the public guess what policies.
It could be really fun. It could just be like, hey guys, it's a surprise. No, that's actually illegal. It has to have, I love this term, reasonable specificity.
So you really need to spell out, we're going to look at the mask policy. We're going to look at the discipline policy. We're going to look at the uniform policy, the bullying and hazing policy. Oh no, the director at the school I serve on the board, he came up to me and he said, hey, on the next board meeting, we need the concussion policy. So you just need to say exactly what policy you're going to be speaking on. And then you make decisions by motion. Now, if somebody comes to the meeting and they speak during public comment, if it's not on the agenda, no matter how great of an idea it is or how urgent it feels, you really can't vote on it because it wasn't properly noticed. And there may be somebody else in the public that wasn't there that would want to speak on that. So you always have to give that 24 hours notice with reasonable specificity.
All right. Now, there are just a couple more really important points that new board members need to be aware of. And I want to kind of go back to the organizational structure, because one of the biggest jobs of the board is to pick the executive director of the school. Whether they call it a director or a principal, there's all sorts of names that charter schools use, but it just means the person in charge of the school. So they're in charge of the management of the school. But the board has a really important role when it comes to that executive. So let's talk about that.
I think it's really important as a new member on the board that you see the contract for that person. And so you know exactly what they've contracted with the board to do or not do. And that's really clear. And then you need to be evaluating them at least once a year. When I taught, I always wanted to be evaluated two or three times because that's how I grew and I could become better at my craft. And administrators are the same way. We really need to be evaluating them on an ongoing process. So as a new board member, you should be able to see the director's last evaluation and his job description.
That's great. Well, I think we've covered a lot of great information. What did we miss?
Well, we've covered all of the things that you just naturally think of, the no-brainers.
Right.
But there's a couple of things we don't often think about when we join a board that we really need to see. You should have a conflict of interest form. You should know if any of your board members might have a conflict of interest and what that is and when it's appropriate for them to be in the meeting or out of the meeting.
What are some examples of that?
If they work in finance, there might be a relationship with like a 401 company, and then the school hires the 401 company, then they might get, again, I'm not a finance person, but they may make money off of the deal if it goes down.
Oh, a commission.
A commission. There we
go. Gotcha.
Yeah. So you just want to do that. The school I sit at, I also work with the Utah Association of Public Charter Schools. So anytime they talk about joining the association, I always need to declare my conflict of interest and not vote on that.
And that's usually a document when you join the board that they'll have you sign and list out any conflicts of interest.
And then it should be updated once a year.
Mm-hmm. 'Cause those can change. Jobs mm-hmm. can change, or, you know, also serving on different nonprofit boards or not just with your job, or if there's an affiliation with a spouse or something too, that can also be a conflict of interest. I've looked at some of the conflict of interest statements from our legislators, and sometimes they'll list out some of those close relationships that might turn out to be, again, a conflict of interest.
Another thing you also should look at is the most recent audit statements. Every charter school in Utah is required to do an audit every year. And just go back and look and see what that audit looks like. Make sure there aren't any red flags that maybe you don't want to be a part of the board if they are sinking financially and not following their policies. And then also make sure, I think this is the most important but the most overlooked, and that is director and officer liability insurance. Make sure that you're covered for serving on that board, that if somebody embezzles money from the school, which I hope would never happen to your school, you just want to make sure as a board member that you're not on the hook for that.
Definitely don't want any personal liability for the millions of dollars that often flow into schools. And that's really important too, because it speaks also to having really good board members, having people that have a vested interest in the school, either through a child going to the school or community involvement, and also just having that personal integrity and willingness to work. Often it's interesting, something that some people don't realize, and not all boards are the same. There are some boards that are more professional, kind of in an advisory role, but there's also a lot of charter school boards that are what I like to call working boards. And a working board are going to be board members that are very engaged in the school, very engaged in looking, you know, at all the academics, engaged in helping with some of the fundraising efforts. Sometimes members of the board might have cross affiliations with their, you know, parent student organization, however that looks at the school. And so to be willing to serve on also some of those outside board committees, if your board has those, is really important to recognize, oh, as a new board member, I might just be doing more than just going to a board meeting for a couple hours once a month. There's going to be some work in there.
And just remember that a working board means that we're really working at focusing in and discovering and making sure that this school is focused on, and our reports are how well is the school doing, that we don't become a working board to do the how well administrative job. Because as a board member, you don't get paid. So let the administrator that you pay worry about the how wells, and you just focus in on the how wells, which will require more work than just attending a board meeting once a month.
That's a really great distinction. I appreciate that. And there is one thing that I forgot that I know is very important is academics. That's like the top. We save the best for last, the most important for last here. How does a new board member get a handle on how the academics are going in a school? What do they look at? Where do they find those reports? Should they just be given those?
So hopefully their school director or school leader is bringing those reports to them. The most often ones we see are the RISE reports, and those usually come out in the fall from the previous year. But there's a whole lot of data you can be looking at. You really should be spending about 30 minutes in every board meeting looking at academic data, whether you're looking at benchmark tests or end-of-year performance tests or looking at charter goals and how we're meeting those. So you're going to come at them from a wide variety of different academic benchmarks and tests. But the most important thing is if you don't understand a report, ask. Ask the school leader, ask the board chair, and they'll walk you through that report and what it means.
That's great. And we will have separate podcasts that kind of break out each of these very specific areas of things. So hopefully this has provided a good overview of some of the things that you're going to encounter as you join a board. So it's kind of a thankless job. So Joylynn and I are going to say thank you here, right?
And, you know, we've gone over a lot of things that might sound scary as being on a board, but it's really one of the best jobs ever. You get to really make sure that students are being educated, that they're receiving a year's worth of knowledge for their year's worth of seat time. And it's just one of my most favorite things to do is to serve on a school board.
Well, we hope that you've learned something. We will have these resources posted on utahcharters.org. And we would love if you'd reach out to us. And we hope that you have enjoyed this first podcast about the roles and duties of new board members. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for listening in today. The Utah Association of Public Charter Schools is a nonprofit organization that provides training, advocacy, and technical support to promote excellence in Utah's public charter schools. Learn more about us on our website at utahcharters.org.